This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver. Here's Tony D.
And a good morning to you. We have reached the Friday end of the week show, which means we're going over NFL games. But not just any games. We've got playoff games. We'll go over Saturday's games and Sunday's games. Now, it's one of my favorite times of the football season because I love going through the schedule and kind of commenting on every team and looking at trends and looking how the matchups are going to be. And it's fun to do it in the postseason, but it's not as fun when, you know, it's more fun when there are games that are real crap. You know, we go, oh, these are two teams that are terrible, and but you're going to get some good games coming up. There's a report that Urban Meyer is going to be talking to Jacksonville about their head coaching opportunity. Reports are that he wants $12 million a year. I don't know if he'll end up getting that, and I don't know if Jacksonville would be smart to pay Urban Meyer that kind of money, but I've always saw this as an end game for Urban Meyer. I always have. I know that as a college football coach, sometimes you love the business of college football. You love just the rhythm of college football. Steve Spurrier found it. Nick Saban found it. You get a little taste of the NFL in some capacity. You know, Saban was an assistant under Belichick and then went back to college and then went to Miami and then went back to college. But there is always going to be a pull. It's always going to be a pull to see if you can be the best at one of the higher levels. And sometimes when you get to that higher level, that's it. You find out that maybe this is better than dealing with 18-year-old kids and begging them to come play for you in their parents' living room. Instead, you're dealing with professionals. But on the flip side, it works the other way. Spurrier found that out when he went to Washington. You have this sort of level of control in college that you don't get when you're dealing with professional athletes, guys whose business it is to play the sport, and for the most part, adults, all right, guys in their 30s who are feeding their families, and you're messing with their money, and you're messing with their career. There's a different aspect to that than when you're in on the college level and you bench a kid or a kid feels like he's got to transfer. You don't necessarily put that in your overall equation like you would at the pros. I would love to see Urban Meyer get to the NFL level just to see if he could do it. He's not one of my favorite coaches, but I am curious of a guy that has that kind of coaching mind, what he could do. And Jacksonville, with Trevor Lawrence coming in, could be the perfect landing spot. All right, we'll go over Saturday's games next as we continue. It's Wake Up Call, SportsMap Radio.
To Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, Joey Kaufman's going to join us in a couple of minutes, about 30 minutes from now. We'll talk to him from the Columbus Dispatch on Ohio State, their chances against Alabama, the season that they just had. Only 7 games, including, now it's 8, right? Are they 7? They're 7-0, right? They played 6 games going into the playoff game against Clemson and now have won 7. That is really low. that is really low.
They're still fresh.
I mean, that's amazing. Joey Kaufman will join us in about 30. We'll talk to him about Ohio State. But now it is time to take a look at Saturday's NFL playoff games. Now, you've been following us along throughout the season. We do this every Friday. We go over the matchups in the NFL, sort of give you some insight into our thoughts. And a lot of times it's based on value, right? Don't watch this game because. Well, we have to kind of tweak that because all of these games have tremendous value. They're playoff games nonetheless, but it still is worth our time. All right, so let's get started. We will go to Orchard Park on Saturday to get things started. The Buffalo Bills taking on the Indianapolis Colts. Now, Buffalo is a team. We talked about them this week with Chris Trapasso. They are 13-3, as I mentioned. But more importantly, they're riding a 6-game win streak. They have won 9 of their last 10. The loss that they had during that stretch is the Hail Mary loss. They felt like they just came together as a team after that, and they've been annihilating everybody. Double-digit wins from that point on. And not only double-digit wins, there have been some games, and I'm looking at you, Denver, I'm looking at you, New England, I'm looking at you, Miami, to close out the season, in which they crush their opponents. Josh Allen is having an MVP-like season, 37 touchdown passes. But there's an angle to this that could be interesting, and that Stephon Diggs and Cole Beasley are questionable. I think both will play, but Diggs is dealing with an oblique injury, and Beasley did not play against the Dolphins. He's dealing with a knee injury. His team can throw and throw and throw, and more importantly, they can score. The Colts, however, have a defense, and it's one of the things that we've talked about, because there's something I still buy, and that is, I don't think Phillip Rivers has been the massive difference maker in this organization. I think he's had some better numbers, but I don't think he's far and away what Tom Brady is to Tampa Bay. He's had a good year. He's 24 touchdowns, 11 interceptions. It's about what you would have expected. It's nothing off the charts. But the Colts defense is really good, and they can slow you down, and they force turnovers. So that is an angle to this. I'm not saying Buffalo should be a heavy favorite here, but outside of the Colts defense, I don't see where the Colts win this other than maybe running the ball really well and defense plays a little more over the top than expected. That's the only way I think they can stop this Buffalo team. This Bills team is as close to the efficiency offensively as Kansas City as you're going to find in the AFC. They throw and they score a lot of points. So that's where I'm at with this one. I just think Buffalo has got too much firepower here to win this game.
Yep.
So we're going to...
I'm looking at the matchup. As much as I want the Colts to do well, I would love to see Phillip Rivers continue on. It's not going to happen.
No, I think that's it.
That's the issue. You know, that's really the only storyline I think really... I mean, the Colts defense is something special and, you know, that probably one not to be sleeping on. But I'm sorry. Unless it's a foregone conclusion that Stephon Diggs and Cole Beasley and any of the other weapons that has made Josh Allen's season can't play, the Colts don't have a chance.
Yeah, I don't think they do. I really don't. And again, I'm not trying to throw away their defense, which has been really good. I just don't think, again, this Bills team is not like last year's Bills team that was just kind of, hey, this is great. They have a system to their madness, and that is they really know how to run their offense. And it's been fantastic. And then, Brian Daboll is being up for head coaching options.
He'll be the next coach of the Chargers. on top of all that, Buffalo's going to have fans in the stands for the first time this season.
Yeah,
you don't
also
think that's going to hype up the Bills?
Yeah, this is something that's kind of overlooked because we talked about the Bills. You know, hey, look, it's the first division, you know, championship in a while. This is the first time in a little over two decades that they're hosting a playoff game.
Yes.
I mean, good for them. That's fantastic.
Not since the Marv Levy, Jim Kelly days.
Right.
That they hosted a playoff
game.
Yeah. Since those Bills.
So this is an important day tomorrow for the city of Buffalo and the Bills.
Side note, I saw somewhere on Twitter yesterday, and I had to comment on it, that, God, why is the Bill Stadium's name escaping me?
Bills Stadium?
Yeah, you know,
it's called Bills Stadium. No, it used to be New Era Field.
No, but not that, the original name.
Rich Stadium?
Rich Stadium.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's always going to be Rich Stadium, but they're looking for a new sponsor.
Right, so now they're Bills Stadium, right.
Right now they're Bills Stadium, but they're looking for a new sponsor. Is there any other logical choice than Costco? Not Costco, the big warehouse store. Costco, who makes a lot of fine plastic products, including tables.
Oh, yeah, that's a good idea. Yeah, why not, right?
Isn't that the most logical choice?
But does that company have the nine-figure income that it would take to own the naming rights of a stadium?
Hey, I think Bill's Mafia has been keeping him employed for the last 5-7
Good
years.
Good point.
They're just shipping tables by the thousands, hundreds of thousands to Buffalo area.
All right, so the mid-game on Saturday, Seahawks taking on the LA Rams. I guess the big question is Jared Goff ready to go? Sean McVay is like, nah, I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that's basically how he's answering every question.
He's doing the coaching thing.
Right, of course
he is.
I'm
a fan of that. It's like, don't do the coaching thing.
It goes back to what we've been saying a long time, and this is kind of the cliche in the NFL, which is what percentage of your starters is still better than 100% of your backup? Where is Jared Goff in terms of his efficiency, and is he still better than anybody else that they would have under center, including backup John Wolford, who earned his first start last week? Now, we've seen guys get into situations where, hey, yeah, sorry about that. You who've never played, welcome to the NFL playoffs. That's kind of a storyline we've seen a number of times. But in this case, I think if you're McVay, you are wondering, again, thumb injury or no thumb injury, is he still at least percentage-wise better than John Wolford at that position to play against Seattle? I don't know what that answer is. I'm sure Sean McVay does, but he's definitely keeping it close to the vest.
All right, question for you, though. Does it matter?
Yeah, that's a question, yeah.
I don't know if it matters if Jared Goff is good to go or not. I still think the Seahawks, I think, are too good. Jared Goff is still too much of an X factor for
me. But I will say this. I think there is, if you give me a team with a really good defense, I give you an opportunity. I give you a chance.
True.
And I think the Rams,
that defense is banged up a little bit.
It is banged up, but they still are number one against the pass. And the Seahawks don't really run the ball that great.
No, they don't. Right?
So, I mean, they're kind of, I think they're middle of the pack in terms of rushing. I mean, they still got Chris Carson and whatnot.
And we've seen this huge drop-off from an MVP season from Russell Wilson.
That's right. So,
who probably now won't get another vote again.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know the numbers off the top of my head, but I do remember when Jeff Hostetler took over for the Giants. I mean, you know, everyone was like, well, that's it. But they ended up winning the Super Bowl because their defense was fantastic. Right, and he just kept you in games enough to make you go, give me a chance. Just give me a chance. And if that defense does it, then they got. But I agree with you in this way. I think that Goff isn't – I've not been so impressed with Jared Goff that I'm like, yeah, he's the difference maker. I think you're right. I don't think anybody is. I don't think there seems to be a feeling that, you know, the Rams absolutely need Jared Goff or their chances are done. Because the orchestra that is singing the praises of Jared Goff is kind of down to like the flautist and maybe a cellist. That's about it. That's all that's pretty much left in the orchestra that's singing the praises of Jared Goff. That's all you got. So
maybe the guy who hits the little triangle. Too.
Maybe him. Maybe he's hanging around and every now and then goes ding. And you go, oh, look at that. Jared Goff's orchestra. But that's about it. The nightcap is the fun one because it's Tom Brady and the Buccaneers against Washington. And the only thing Washington, all right, I shouldn't say only, they're bringing two things to the table. They're bringing the incredible comeback story of Alex Smith, and they're bringing a defense that could be a real problem. Now, you talk about the Rams being number one against the pass. Washington's right behind them.
Yes.
Right behind them.
And especially in the last couple of games, too.
And I'm going to stay consistent here. If you give me a team with a really good defense, I give you a chance. I can't guarantee a win, but I give you a chance. I like Chase Young wanting a piece of Brady. Do you know why? Because I've seen the Steelers do this for years and years and years. And what happens? Brady eats you alive when you do that. I don't know how it happens, but you just eat him alive. He just eats you alive. I like the brashness, though, of Chase Young. I like it. I mean, talk a little trash. Want Tom Brady. Want to prove yourself against one of the best. That's great. I still think the Buccaneers walk in this one.
I love Tom Brady's reply to it, too, because Tom Brady was, you know, did the typical Tom Brady thing. Like, oh, he's a good player. He's a really good player.
Yeah.
But then, you know, I didn't hear Chase Young bring this up, but Tom Brady certainly did. It's like, ah, you know, well, it's... Maybe it's a little like that Ohio State Michigan thing.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, exactly.
Tom Brady, you never played. You didn't play for Michigan. I mean, that was decades ago.
I remember William Gray of the Steelers. He did this where he ran his mouth against Brady, and Brady picked on him specifically in the game, and just embarrassed the hell out of him.
Yeah.
So I don't know. You're not doing that with Chase Young. Chase Young's chasing you, but still.
I do expect Chase Young to get a sack.
Right. I do. I also do too.
And for whatever reason, I also expect Chase Young to get a flag thrown for a late hit.
Sure. Why wouldn't he? Why not?
Roughing the passer.
But I did like what Bruce Arians said. I think we talked about it earlier this week where he talked about Alex Smith. He said, look, I'm not dealing with a 7-9 team. I'm dealing with a 4-1 team with Alex Smith. That's a good way to put that, right? I mean, that's a good way to put that. The quarterback matters a lot. And if he plays well, the Redskins have won under him. And that could be a problem for Tampa Bay. But look, Brady's the last time we saw Tom Brady in the playoffs last year, you know, what was it? Logan Ryan was returning an interception for a touchdown, and that was the last we saw of him in the postseason.
Yeah.
Right? That was it. So Brady does have this way about him in 20 years where he likes a redemption story. He likes He likes it when he's failed to come back to achieve. He's done it his whole career. I always kind of downplay those kind of things, those motivations. But for Brady, it works. It just seems to work. Where he has a bad playoff or he has a bad Super Bowl, and then the next thing you know, he's winning another one or he's coming back and playing well. And I think there's an angle to this that I think Brady did not come to Tampa Bay to prove he could still throw 40 passes. He came to lead a team to the Super Bowl, and this is the first step. And yep. So that's where I see this
now,
game going.
Another thing, because the NFL did not do this for us in Week 17. But can they please just bring out the comeback trophy and do it on the field in Washington?
I would love that.
Yeah. This is more than likely their last home game,
yep.
Even though they have no fans. But can we do that, please?
That would be nice. That would be nice.
You know, that's the only surefire award we know.
Still such a great story.
Incredible.
All right, when we come back, we'll go to Sunday's games, Steelers and the Browns, and we've got the Saints and the Bears, and, of course, the Titans and the Ravens. We'll preview that coming up next. It's Wake Up Call Sports Map Radio.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsNap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, glad you can be with us as we continue our previews of the wild card round of the playoffs. A weak battery could leave you stranded, so don't take a chance. O'Reilly Auto Parts will test that battery free of charge, and if your battery needs to be replaced, their professional parts people can help you find the exact battery that fits your car or truck at a guaranteed low price. So make sure your vehicle is prepared for the weather ahead by getting your battery tested for free at O'Reilly Auto Parts. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. All right, we'll continue to take a look at the postseason. I think this is the most intriguing game of the weekend. It's one of my, you know, look, it may not be the must-watch game of the weekend is what I'm trying to say. Like, it doesn't have Tom Brady, it doesn't have a division rival, but it has two good running teams, and that's Baltimore and Tennessee. Both are 11-5. The Ravens are a road favorite in this one, which is a little odd given that the Titans have already beaten the Ravens this year and then beat them in the playoffs last year. But the Ravens come in red hot. They have won 5 in a row, and they are the number one rushing team in the league. The Titans have Derrick Henry. He's the number one rusher in the league. The Ravens don't throw the ball much because they don't have to, and the Titans can throw the ball when they want to. And it makes this a very intriguing matchup, because if you've got a team like the Ravens who can get you with ball control and can slow you down, they only allow 19 points a game. The Titans are averaging 31. Something's got to give here. I know why the Ravens are favored, but I still like the Titans in this one. I think as far as competitiveness, I think this could be the top game of the weekend. I think we could have some really close games and some really good matchups. I think this could beat them all. I think this could be a really, really fun fourth quarter between these two teams.
Without a doubt. I'm 100% with you on this. I think this is the game to watch.
It really is.
You know, and if it wasn't for storylines or maybe the fact that not many of the rest of the country know who the Titans or the Ravens are, this would probably be your Sunday nighter, right?
Yeah, it really has a lot of really competitive elements to it. Yeah. Like, I've been dissecting the numbers all week. And it's just amazing the punch, counterpunch that both of these teams will bring you. I mean, it really is.
It doesn't have that sex fan appeal.
Right.
That would push it to a Sunday nighter. But it's going to be the best game.
The thing that is scaring Titans fans here in Nashville, at least amongst my friends that I converse with, is they just don't like the Titans defense. They're not comfortable with it. But they counter that by saying, but it may not matter. If we can score points, who cares, right? It doesn't matter because the Ravens are a very one-dimensional team. I think they're last in passing in the NFL, but they don't need to. They run the ball great.
Name a receiver.
Right.
They have runners.
So if you get to 11-5 with doing one thing well, it means nobody's been able to contain it and stop it. So that's what would worry me, especially if I'm the Titans and defense hasn't been the thing that I'm known for this season. I'm known for Ryan Tannehill being able to throw the ball to A.J. Brown and Corey Davis and Derrick Henry rushing for over 2,000 yards. But I'm not all that famous for getting to the quarterback and causing havoc and creating problems in the throwing lanes.
Yeah.
That's the Titans' problem.
And the other thing to keep in mind, too, like where Titans fans should be a little worried, the Ravens definitely have last year's playoff score circled.
Oh, without doubt. Absolutely.
Somewhere. Even though they're playing it off like, oh, no, that was last year. We don't even think about it. Like, no. You all are thinking about it.
Yeah, exactly. All right. The Bears and the Saints. You know, I don't want to pick on this game, but if there's one I got to get out of here and do something else, this might be the one.
Yeah.
What is it about? Look, congratulations, Bears. You made the playoffs. Great. That's great. But I'm not changing my opinion about your team, and I'm not changing my opinion about Mitch Trubisky. I'm not changing my opinion about your coach. I was more interested in you when you were losing games, and that was where I was at with you. Great that the system allowed you into the postseason. You earned it. The rules were right there in front of you, and you got it. But please, Alvin Kamara, no Alvin Kamara. The Saints better win this by double digits.
NFL Network is doing a thing. They're going through, like, believe it or not. And the thing that they said was the Saints losing this game would be an all-time playoff shocker. Right?
You know what? Yeah, absolutely.
I'm going to say no. Because here's the deal with the Saints. Sometimes you get a really great team, and a lot of times the Saints get beat over some fluke play. And
right.
I could see that happening.
Now, that would be incredible if we did get a sort of fluky ending to this.
Yeah. Now, yeah. I don't see this happening with the Bears. It'll probably happen in the next round.
Right.
Because I think you're absolutely right. I think the Bears or the Saints win by double digits. But I would not be shocked if the Bears just happened to be keeping it close all game long. The Saints couldn't really get their passing game going for whatever reason. And then it was some fluke play at the end. Whether it was no pass interference called, whether it was, hey, this guy went for the glory play and left Stephon Diggs wide open.
Right, yeah, that's true.
Or you just happen to let a running back just run down your throat.
Yeah, exactly.
Whatever the case may be, I would not be shocked if that happened to the Saints.
Again. Is the NFL Network pointing that out because the Saints shouldn't even be playing this weekend under normal circumstances?
I don't know if they're – I don't think they're pointing that out.
Yeah, just saying, look, it would be an all-time shocker because...
Yeah, unfortunately, I'm listening to this show.
They should... Be. You saw that right now.
Yeah, right now.
You didn't see that on Thursday night.
They're talking about it right now.
Oh, so you're just glancing up without any context.
Right.
Right.
All I saw was the headline, Saints losing playoff... This playoff game would be an all-time... Or Saints losing this game... Would be an all-time playoff.
Oh,
shocker.
I got you. I have
no idea what they said.
Yeah. Okay. Very good. That's good.
But I mean, yes, it would on one hand, but on the other hand, not really, because we've seen what happened to the Saints.
Well, it could. Yeah, that's right. But at the same time, again, with the new playoff format, they shouldn't be in this round.
They shouldn't be
right at 12-4. They shouldn't be in there because if you get upset, if you're a home team and you get upset in the division round after a bye, you're playing a team that did win a playoff game.
Right.
Like if you're a one seed and you go down in your first playoff game. You're going to a team that is advancing. Like they won a playoff game. They got a playoff win under their belt. But if you're a two seed and you lose in the first weekend, normally we don't see that because you don't play in the first weekend. So that makes sense. The Steelers and the Browns. Man, I am nervous as a fan, but I'm as excited as an NFL fan for this game.
Yes.
So I'm getting both here. I think the Steelers could be in trouble. They have not been impressive except for one half against the Colts in their last five games. Now, you can throw off last week they were playing Mason Rudolph and a lot of players didn't play. Fine. I'll make it four games. The four games minus last weekend. The Browns gave everything they had to win that game against the Steelers. The Steelers went for an onside kick after blowing a two-point conversion. So they took the Browns to the limit. But the Browns are a playoff team now. They are in the postseason. And what they do with that, how it rejuvenates them, how they're going to play without their head coach on the sidelines, what kind of moxie does Baker Mayfield bring, it is all on the table for us. And going up against a Steelers team that's hurting.
Yeah.
Really hurting.
This game is the fun one, too. I know we were talking Titans, Ravens, if you're a football fan, that's the game to watch. This one, the storylines, the history. I'm so happy this is Sunday night. This is
yeah,
I'm
going to
settle in and just don't bother me.
Really enjoy it. Really enjoy it. Rivals that would hate to lose to one another. Browns did it before. Steelers always seem to beat Cleveland. It's hard to lose them in the playoffs.
listening to Wake Up Call on the SportsNap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, continuing to preview the national championship game Monday in Miami. Yesterday we talked Alabama. Let's get the Ohio State side of things. And let's go to our Progressive guest line. Progressive making it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. Get your quote at progressive.com today. Joey Kaufman joins us, Columbus Dispatch, to talk Buckeyes. How are you, Joey?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. Did you find it surprising, as much of the nation did, with the efficiency and the preparedness of that Ohio State team against Clemson?
I think you had to, because that was a game that we had not seen from Ohio State all season. If you were to ask me in September if I was surprised, I would have said no. But through the first six games Ohio State had played in the regular season, they hadn't put a complete game together like that. They had shown flashes between the passing game, the running game, and their defense, but there was never one game where all three of those phases were really clicking at the same time, and that happened in the Sugar Bowl, and they were able to steamroll Clemson as a result. I don't think any of us expected them to win as handily as they did.
Before we get to some of the specifics about what it would take to beat Alabama, let's go over the season. A lot of people have been pointing out that, you know, this Ohio State team, you kind of alluded to it, that was never really complete, especially on the offensive line. What kind of regular season, and maybe even the conference championship game added to that, what has it been like for Ohio State and Ryan Day?
There's really been a lot of disruption, and I know a lot of people focused on the fact that, oh, Ohio State will go into the playoff fresh. They haven't played as many games. They don't have the wear and tear on their bodies. But from Ohio State's perspective, they never really felt like they were able to get in a rhythm or really kind of get their sea legs a little bit, because they started the season much later than the other conferences did, in late October, and they play 1 week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks. They have three pretty much normal weeks where they don't have any coronavirus cases, and their roster's together, and they play in consecutive weeks, and they started to get a feel for things. And then around Thanksgiving time, they have an outbreak of cases, and they have to cancel a game against Illinois, and they had a previous game against Maryland canceled because of COVID issues at Maryland. So then you get to this back half of the season in late November and December, where you have a lot of starters out for some games. They played Michigan State without three of their five starters on the offensive line. So it was just a very choppy finish to their season. A lot of stop and start and stop and start. They played three games in 6 weeks. So for the coaching staff, they never really felt like they had really a strong grasp of their roster. And for a lot of players, they never felt as if they were truly able to get in a rhythm.
So a limited number of games, a season that there really wasn't a rhythm with postponements, cancellations, and whatnot. Whereas Alabama seemed to, you know, get through their schedule, had some bumps in the road as well. But a lot of national attention outside of Tuscaloosa and Columbus and Ohio and Alabama may have been focused on what, you know, Mac Jones was doing, and maybe not so much Justin Fields. What kind of season was he having before his 6-touchdown performance against the Tigers?
It was a lot like Ohio State's season. In the first few weeks, he was brilliant. I mean, he threw at one point as many touchdowns as incompletions in the first couple of weeks. But getting into mid to late November, he threw three interceptions against Indiana. That was the first time he had thrown multiple interceptions in a Big Ten game. You know, he wasn't a very efficient quarterback, but that was caught a lot of people off guard because he hadn't been turnover happy at any point, and then goes out in a big time game against Indiana Hoosiers and throws three picks. But still, overall, a good game. He would attribute some of those interceptions to maybe trying to force too many big plays, and he still had a share of big plays. And then in the Big Ten Championship against Northwestern, he has another multiple interception game, throws two picks, and completes less than 50% of his passes for the first time in his career. So going into this big-time Sugar Bowl game where he throws a career-high 6 touchdown passes and plays through bruised ribs and a sprained thumb, he was also coming off the worst statistical game of his career. So there was a lot of questions just going into that semifinal, just how would he respond from the choppy last leg of the season.
We all know how important offensive lines are, and when they're gelling, it allows the offense to open up with the quarterback, protecting the quarterback, allowing him to do what he does. But for Ohio State, what we saw in the Sugar Bowl was an amazing offensive line performance, the way they pushed Dabo Sweeney's Clemson Tigers around, but also opened up the running game, and then Justin Fields does what he does. Was that give us an idea of how inconsistent that was this year for Ohio State.
That was the Ohio State's offensive line was supposed to be one of their strongest groups coming in. They're led by center Josh Myers, who's a Remington Award finalist. The right guard Wyatt Davis is another guy who's probably going to be a high draft pick next year's draft. They had returning tackles, so they had a lot of depth on the offensive line and a lot of their big time starters back, and they've done a good job of protecting Justin Fields for the most part. But really, where I think their calling card is just the way they're able to open up holes in the running game, and I think that's why you'll be able to see Trey Sermon really come on strong, the running back for the Buckeyes, and the graduates from Oklahoma have such a strong late season stretch run is because he'll run through some gaping holes set by the offensive line and really set by the interior from their guards, the way they're able to block and create some openings for him. But in some ways, they are a spread team. Ryan Day is really modernized their offense, but they do have some traits and some hallmarks of a classic Big Ten team with some big guys up front.
So during the SEC season, we saw Kyle Trask being able to throw against Alabama, Kellen Mond been able to throw against Alabama. The way Justin Fields is playing, do you sense a vulnerability on Alabama's defensive side against the pass?
I think so. I think partly it's just the way college football is played. If you have a good passing game, you're going to be able to get yours if you do everything you're supposed to. I think if Justin Fields is healthy, I think he's going to have a chance to put up big numbers against Alabama secondary, and that's been a group that's been exposed a little bit with the deep ball. I think Alabama's given up 11 pass plays of 40-plus yards or more, and Ohio State was able to throw downfield against Clemson. Especially it helps that they've had Chris Olave back. He missed the Northwestern game after testing positive for the coronavirus and really wasn't for sure going to be able to play against Clemson until a couple days before the game. He talked about just his legs being tired, and Justin Fields hit him twice on touchdown passes, including a 50-plus yard deep ball. That's one of his favorite targets, especially their deep downfield connection. So getting him back was huge because Ohio State does not have a ton of depth at wide receiver. They have two really, really good receivers in Olave and Garrett Wilson, who moved into the slot this year, but they have a lot of untested guys outside of those two. So getting Olave back is really critical if they're going to be able to take advantage of Alabama downfield.
All right, let's take a look at the defensive side because we know Alabama's offensive guys have been getting all the awards this year. Defensively, how do the Buckeyes look?
They are good up front. They've always really, it's been a theme for them the last few years. They're coached by Larry Johnson, who's really a technician in terms of teaching defensive linemen, and it's no secret they've produced a lot of NFL guys out of that spot, from the Bosa brothers to Chase Young last year, and they have some good players up front this year, from Tyreek Smith and Jonathan Cooper and Tommy Togiai and Haskell Garrett in the interior of the defensive line. So they're a group that's going to be able to generate some pressure, and that'll be, I think, the matchup to watch in this game is Ohio State's defensive line against Alabama's offensive line, which is arguably the best in the country after winning the Joe Moore Award and the way they're able to protect Mac Jones. But if Ohio State could get some pressure on them, that's something they could really stand to benefit from. But where Ohio State, I think, has had their bigger issues on defense is in the back end. It's a young secondary. The only returning starter was Sean Wade, who he himself moved from slot corner to outside corner, so he was learning a new position in the secondary. And you have a lot of young starters who have only started half a dozen games. That's really a product of this shortened season, is they had a lot of new starters they needed to break in, and they don't have a lot of experience to fall back on because they've only played a handful of games.
Joey Kaufman joins us, Columbus Dispatch on Ohio State, as they get ready for Miami and their game against Alabama for the national title. Joey, how loose is this team? We talk about teams going into these big stages, and Ohio State certainly is a big school that gets on the big stage. They looked very confident and very prepared for Clemson. How loose are they going into Monday?
I think the largest question about, I guess, the emotional state of Ohio State will be how much gas they have left in the tank, because they had put so much effort and focus and drive into beating Clemson. This has been the thorn in their side in recent years. It's been their main roadblock in terms of advancing in the playoff. Clemson beat Ohio State in 2016. And 2019, and last year's loss was really heartbreaking because Ohio State had been up 16-0
in the game, and they plastered the score of that game in their weight room during winter conditioning. So it was something that really had been a driving focus for them throughout much of the year. And you saw in the way they celebrated at the end of the game, the parents of players were chanting Dabo, Dabo, because they remembered his coach's poll vote. They doused confetti and Kerry Combs, the defensive coordinator, was doing snow angels in the confetti on the field. So it had the feel of a very much a team that accomplished one of their biggest goals of the season. So I think the emotional regrouping of them will be key. Obviously, I think they're going to try very hard in the national title game to beat Alabama, but you just wonder how much they have left in the tank and how much energy was spent trying to beat Clemson 10 days ago.
Yeah, I saw it written that it's very comparable to the hockey team in 80, beat the Soviets, but you still had to beat Finland to win the gold, but all the energy and all of the attention was on that game against the Soviets. Is that, how does Ryan Day handle that? How does Ryan Day, you know, because again, that was a classic last year. That was a disappointing loss, but that was one of the more epic college football playoff games that we've seen since its arrival. How does Ryan Day handle that going into Miami?
I think it's one of the key X factor things for Ryan Day to handle this week. And all the players and Ryan Day have said all the right things this week. They've talked about beating Clemson was not the season's goal, or their ultimate goal was to win a national championship. They've given lip service to that. And I'm sure they would love to win a national championship. I expect them to maybe be a little looser because they've been able to knock off Clemson at some point. Sure, you spend a lot of energy to beat Clemson, but at some point, your season was redeemed a little bit, and you're playing with house money a little bit. So I think that's something that also could come into play, where they've kind of gotten through that stage. They can take a deep breath a little bit, but I think kind of maintaining focus and having the same sort of energizing performance will be something to watch.
All right, your final thoughts on the game and as a whole. The names are there offensively. We know it from Alabama. We know it from Ohio State. These are the names that have been prominent in college football. Do you think in the end this is a shootout? This is a high-scoring affair, and may the winner is the last team standing?
I think so. I think one of my colleagues at the paper this week remarked this is going to be kind of like an arena football league game where you just need a couple stops here and there. To get a couple stops, you're going to win. I think that'll probably be true. I don't see how this game is anything but a shootout, and where you're both teams are scoring 35 plus points. I think Ohio State can certainly hang with Alabama. I mean, look, the offensive performance they had against Clemson was no fluke. Six of their seven touchdown drives when 80 plus yards. So they were driving the length of the field on this team. It was not like they sort of stumbled into the opportune field position and was able to just punch it in. They were moving the ball with surgical precision against Clemson. So I think it'll be a high-scoring game. I think it's going to be hard for Ohio State because I just don't trust their secondary in a big game like this against Mac Jones, and you're asking a lot on the defensive line to get pressure on them. I think that's certainly possible. I think they'll be able to pressure Mac Jones, but I don't think it'll be enough in the end. I think I have to give the edge to Alabama ultimately.
Joey, great time. Appreciate it so much. Good insight on this game, and enjoy down in Miami. Appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Joey Kaufman, Columbus Dispatch on the Buckeyes. Some good stuff to dissect when we come back. It is Tony D. Ron Culver's Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. And this hour of Wake Up Call presented by Rocket Mortgage. Need a mortgage to fit your life? Rocket can. I like the way that Joey pointed that out about how Ohio State was very, very motivated to beat Clemson. And then even though you have a coach and players that understand the big picture, there is a motivation can only pull you to the finish line so much, right? There's still another game on tap. If you put something on the wall, if you put a score up, if you make a certain matchup your target, if that's what's motivating you, when you reach the goal, sometimes it's hard to get to the next level. I'll give you an example. It's not even on the same area, but I know in my life, I was kind of, I was really overweight, and I wanted to run a 5K, and I thought I'd never be able to do it. And I said, nope,
It was like 2014. And I said, I'm going to go every day. I'm going to go a little further every day. And I remember I put up 5K on the wall, and I was like writing my times down and my distances, and I had the app, and I was going to get shoes, and I went all the time. I mean, all the time. And every day I would try to go a little bit further, a little bit further. And some days I didn't, and some days I did. And then I came to the 5K event, and I did it. And then people said, what are you going to do now? I was like, well, I'm going to run a 10K. And I'll be honest with you, I never got even close. I had achieved what I wanted to achieve. That was the only thing on my mind for a year. And it's similar in that regards, is that Ohio State's goal is obviously to win a national title, but it's everybody's motivation to win a national title, right? But they lost a classic. I mean, last year, that Fiesta Bowl, they lost a classic. And Joey was right. They were up 16-0. They had a late turnover. Clemson won the game. And you could only feel how much that would drive them the next year. It's one of the reasons they wanted to play, right? That fire still burned. They got it. They got their revenge. They got their moment. They got their matchup they wanted. They won the game. And not only did they win the game, they won it with efficiency and ease. They really beat Clemson in every facet of the game. And Justin Fields had 6 touchdowns. It was brilliant. But the finish line is over there. And that over there is Monday night against Miami. If it really is about winning the national title, that's where you have to go. So all of your attention needs to be over there. Herb Brooks knew it with the hockey team. Soviets, that's one thing. But if we don't win the gold, we didn't do anything. And it's the same here. Beat Clemson in the semifinal, great. Beat Alabama, win it all. That's the goal. And I'll be interested to see how it plays out on Monday. Have a great weekend. Wake up call.